Welcome to Color Country Politics, where we discuss all the important political issues facing Iron County, Utah. Our guests include elected officials and community leaders in or representing Iron County. This is episode 32, 248 or Bust.
And welcome back to Color Country Politics. You guys, I am so thrilled today. We have the most amazing guests with us. We have Lieutenant Governor Spencer Cox is in the house.
It's great to be with you
today.
Guys.
Thank you so much.
I'm so excited to finally be a guest.
Right, yeah. I know you've been knocking at our door for a long time. We finally had a spot open.
We're trying to be choosy.
You totally made the cut. Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm Jenny Hendricks here with
Jesse Harris.
And we are going to jump right in because we only got a few minutes with Lieutenant Governor today. So, you know, just a couple, you're in town today for two reasons.
Right, yes.
Tell us why you're here.
Yeah, so the first reason, we got here yesterday for the Rural Summit. This is an annual event. I think this is the 32nd Rural Summit that we've had. A little different this year. There's been a change of leadership, and Stephen Lisenby is now in that office.
Doing such a great job.
He's doing a really, really great job. It's been a phenomenal conference so far. Day one was exceptional. The governor just landed.
He's
here in town for day two. And we're really excited. So that's the first reason we're here. Mm-hmm. The second reason is many people know, I'm running for governor.
Wait!
And we are visiting all 248 cities, incorporated cities and towns here in the state, and so we will continue going to Iron County and Beaver County, kind of working our way now north and central a little bit, and we're excited to keep going. We crossed halfway last week.
That's exciting.
In Kanab, and so we're on the downhill side.
Yeah, I got to tell you, as people who live in a rural area, it is really, really cool, and we are very grateful that you are making a point of going to the smaller towns, the rural areas. Because it's different than it is on the Wasatch Front.
Yeah, it is. And you know, but I live in a small town. Mm-hmm. I live in Fairview in Sanpy County. And we never had candidates for governor come to Fairview. We just got skipped. 1,200 people, we're too small. And we decided, my wife and I decided, if we were going to do this, we wanted to do it differently. And one of those things would be we wanted to go where the people were. We felt like that was important. We wanted to set a really high bar. I don't know if we're going to win, but nobody's going to outwork us.
Right,
And it does mean, again, it meant a lot to me when we would get people to come. And so if we can do that for others, it's just, you know, we'll be in a small town and you'll have 5 people, sometimes you'll have 50 people. Yeah. You just never know. But it's really remarkable and we've loved it.
And it's you have a different conversation with people in a small town. And all the conversations are important, whether you're on the Wasatch Front or in a small town. But it's great that you're including all of those conversations.
That's really cool. Want to be able to look people in the eye and say, I know where you live, and more importantly, I know the issues that you're dealing with. The governor and I visit all 29 counties almost every year.
Right.
Yeah.
And I once thought that was enough. that's good. We've checked the box.
Well, that's kind of the new standard now. Like, everyone's like, oh, I'm going to visit all 29 counties now. I mean, I still got one to tick off for me to visit all of them.
We'll get you out there, Jesse. Right. Wherever it is.
Rich County, here I come.
Right. Got to go to Bear Lake and get a raspberry shake.
Oh, yeah.
So. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, right.
That's what's that. But it is remarkable. We make the mistake of assuming that, you know, all you go to Iron County and all the towns are the same, and they're not. And they all have their distinct flavor, their distinct ups, their distinct trials and struggles, and hearing those, and then being able to help.
Yeah. Well,
we had a fiber optic project in Rush Valley, of all places, that had stopped, and nobody knew what was going on and couldn't figure it out. I was able to get on with the federal government and those who were involved and get it going again. So that's the cool part, too, as Lieutenant Governor, I can work on these issues now. I don't have to wait a year and a half for an election. And so my only regret is that I didn't do it sooner.
Yeah. That's great.
That's great.
That's great. Well, could we transition just a little bit? And, you know, some other things that we would love to get your input on are, you know, some of the projects that maybe we could take advantage of or partner with from Iron County, from Cedar City, with some of the stuff that's happening on the Wasatch Front. We've got Port 15 here, you know, talking about Silicon Slopes and Silicon Spokes and that kind of stuff. Give us your insight into those.
Yeah, so it's a great question. It's something I spent a lot of time on. Two and a half years ago, the governor came to me and, governor, and we had this conversation about rural Utah. Unemployment was at 3% in the state. Everything's going along great. Best state for business. Mm-hmm. And yet there were parts of rural Utah that were still struggling. Mm-hmm. And the governor said, look, I want to focus more on rural Utah over these next 4 years, assuming we were reelected in 2016, and we were. And he said, so, the 25 counties off the Wasatch Front, that's where we want to be our focus. And we want to help create 25,000 jobs. That was our goal. And so I went, visited every county, talked to economic development mm-hmm. leadership, education, mm-hmm. business, nonprofits, everyone. And we were looking for ways to partner. Mm-hmm. That was what mm-hmm. I found very early on, was that was going to be the key
right.
to success. Mm-hmm. Because we have thousands of jobs on the Wasatch Front that we can't fill right now. So mm-hmm. how do we convince people to look at rural Utah?
Uh-huh.
Now, I'm not crazy. I know that big companies aren't going to just flock to places like Fairview or Scipio or, it's just,
right.
it's just mm-hmm. not
yeah.
going to happen.
Yeah.
But where can we find those partnerships? First of all, we have some regional hubs that I think are absolutely primed for that. Mm-hmm. Richfield, Price, Vernal, and right here in Cedars.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're very similar in size mm-hmm. and have an infrastructure that's there. Most of them also have a relationship with higher education.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so that's one area of focus. Scott Wyatt, who's the president yeah. here, we've worked very closely together.
Good.
He was the president at Snow College where I was a county commissioner.
Yeah.
And I believe that tie to higher ed is really key
yeah.
to that. And then what do those communities have going for them? So right now there's some great things happening in Cedar. You guys are more well of aware of that than I am. But you mentioned a couple of them. Mm-hmm. CyberJet's another one,
uh-huh.
right?
Yep.
That's
yep.
a huge deal.
Yeah.
So we last year we went to I led a trade mission to the largest air show in the world in Farnborough,
okay.
London. It's every other year it's near London, and then this year it was in France, and the governor went this year. And we took representatives from CyberJet with us,
great.
And with the composite industry. And so we're trying to get those clusters mm-hmm. and look for ways to expand. Two that you mm-hmm. mentioned that are really important. The inland port and what that's going to mm-hmm. do, and we are already talking about how we expand that into rural Utah.
Cool.
It's going to be huge for you guys.
Yeah. Yeah.
Really, really huge.
Yeah.
You've got some manufacturing going on.
Exactly.
We're going to do more of that.
Yep.
So that's a big deal. And then the hub and spoke model with Silicon Slopes. They are desperate for talent.
Uh-huh.
Just desperate right now.
Mm-hmm.
You've got an incredible institution of higher learning that can help with some of that talent.
Uh-huh.
And so that just has to be the model moving forward.
Yeah.
And we're really excited about some of those projects.
Yesterday during the economic summit, the topics of conversation was talking about workforce development and the remote work initiative, which I think is such a great fit for cities of this size, where we've got Southern Utah University, we've also got Southwest Tech. So talk to us a little bit about what that looks like, that kind of workforce development, and then the remote work initiative.
Yeah, so we've made a little bit of a mistake, and I've written about this. Our focus has been so much, and rightfully so, when Governor Herbert became governor, we were in the depths of the Great Recession. Mm-hmm. We were at 6% unemployment, headed north of 8, which is where
yeah.
we kind of bottomed out. And so the focus was on recruiting businesses to Utah mm-hmm. and incentives to get them here.
Mm-hmm.
And it worked spectacularly
yeah.
well.
Right? Yeah.
We've done great. Now we need to change that focus to workforce development. Mm-hmm. At 2.8% unemployment, we can't fill a lot of these jobs,
yeah.
and they're good jobs.
Right,
really,
yeah.
Really good
yeah.
jobs. And we have a large mm-hmm. segment of our society, of our citizens, who are underemployed.
Mm-hmm.
They do have jobs, but they're not making enough to raise a family mm-hmm. and do the things that they want. So my proposal was, let's focus more on workforce development. That's actually going to do more to get businesses here than anything else we do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And again, it's better for our citizenry. And so we're really excited about some of the programs we're working on with workforce development and starting younger. This is where, another place where we've made a mistake as a society. this it's twofold. This idea that everyone has to have a bachelor's degree.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep.
Which is a terrible mistake.
Yep.
And so a lot of kids have gone to college and then dropped out because, you know, their aptitudes are different.
Yes.
And it's our tech and trades have struggled because of that.
Yeah.
And we need that for our economy. That's one area. But then the other area is helping young people get more involved. Having work as education is something they do better in Europe. And so we're really focused on these pathways programs now to give kids in high school and even starting in middle school opportunities to graduate from high school with certificates in aerospace manufacturing.
That's incredible.
Diesel mechanics, in IT, computer science, those types of things. And that's just a game changer because now they can go to college.
Yeah.
And we encourage them to, but they can also earn money while they're doing that. Some of them can go right into the workforce.
Yeah.
So that's been a major focus in workforce development, is starting at a younger age to help them understand it's better for the economy.
Yeah.
Aligning higher ed with workforce, something Scott White does very well.
Yeah.
Just realizing that, yes, you can get a degree in anything you want, but there are certain degrees that will help the economy and help you better.
Absolutely.
And let's put more money into those. Let's focus on those. And then this remote work project that we're doing. So we have this rural online initiative. It's free to everyone in rural counties.
I went through it. It's great.
You did it.
Yeah.
Awesome. That's fantastic.
So I'd love to hear your thoughts.
Yeah. Jesse. So I've been a remote worker for quite a while.
For a long time. Yeah.
Yeah. I was a remote worker when I moved here. It's why I could move here. It's because I already had the job in my pocket. But I've been working remotely for a year before that. I'd done a little bit of remote work, you know, part-time. You know, sometimes I'm at home. Sometimes I'm in the office. You know, I went through it to see, all right, let's see what this is all about, because I'm someone who's been there, I've lived it, I've done it, and it is really great to, you know, teach you about the tools that you can use for communication, for time management, for project management, how to go and track down that work, because that's a really tough one, is how do you find the remote jobs?
Yeah.
So you look at so many job listings, they don't say anything about remote, and you're like, oh, well, there must not be any remote jobs, and it's just not true, they're there, you just have to know how to find them.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I love to hear that. I've talked to several people who have gone through it. It takes about a month to go through, and it's just remarkable, and it is helping people, especially in rural Utah, be able to find those jobs and keep those jobs and upgrade their work or find new work.
How do they find that program?
So you can just Google it, Rural Online Initiative, but it's through Utah State Extension. So
you
go to Utah State and their Extension program.
Okay.
That's where you can find it directly. Mm-hmm. We as a state, as I was traveling around, as I mentioned, I kept encouraging these companies who were looking for new hires to allow for more remote work. And they're very hesitant. And they're hesitant because I think 10 years ago when remote work became the buzzword, the technology wasn't quite there.
Yeah.
They didn't know how to manage people. They, you know, they didn't have the tools. And so they backed away from it. And it dawned on me, I'm a little slow sometimes, that we, as a state, we happen to be one of the biggest employers in the state.
Okay, sure, sure.
We have 20,000 employees. And we should be looking at remote work. So the governor allowed me to do a pilot program here in the state. We had 130 remote workers, and they worked from home at least 3 days a week, 3 to 5 days a week.
Mm-hmm.
And we monitored everything they did. So we knew, and to sign up for the program, they agreed to this, but we knew what kind of car they drove. We knew the emissions that came out of that car. We looked at their driving behavior, driving patterns. We measured their mental health. They would take surveys about how happy they were, how they were feeling about life, and then we measured their productivity down to the minute details versus their colleagues who were doing the exact same work.
Uh-huh.
So we were comparing apples to apples, and we did this for 6 months, and then we just looked at the data, and we were shocked at how incredible the results were.
No kidding.
So first of all, their driving habits changed because we knew they really weren't commuting, but they changed in other ways as well. Took a lot of pollution out of the air, which is good, on the Wasatch Front especially. Number two, they were so much happier than their colleagues. Now, some of them struggled at first, and we actually have a mental health professional who deals with remote work, working through this to help train people. It's different when you're alone, you know, in your home office. Jesse, you've probably felt that a little bit.
You
got
to make the effort to get out of the house every now and then. You're nuts.
Yeah, that's important.
That's funny.
And we get them to, you know, get up and take a walk and enjoy it. And by the end, they were all much happier. Wow. I mean, to the person. I don't think we had one person who was less happy than at the end mm-hmm. than they were at mm-hmm. the beginning. Mm-hmm. Most of them reported that their mental health was much better.
That's afterwards. Amazing.
And best for taxpayers and for the state was that we saw, and this was the number that blew us away. I was hoping it would be about even, but we saw a 22% increase in productivity.
No kidding.
22%.
Wow.
Which busts all the myths out there that if you let people work from home, they'll stay in their pajamas all day and they actually won't accomplish anything.
Yeah.
It's just not true. Now, wow. We train supervisors. People would have contact uh-huh. every day uh-huh. with their colleagues. Uh-huh. We would do that via video chat. But it was just remarkable to see. Now, think about what that means, 22% increase in productivity, and now a substantial, and we're hoping by the end of next year to have 2,500 employees
wow.
who are doing remote work at least 3 days a week. So now we don't have to build nearly as many new buildings.
Right.
We yeah. can get out of some of our leases that were bad leases or old leases. So save taxpayer dollars uh-huh. there, uh-huh. right? We're getting cars off the uh-huh. off the freeway, which uh-huh. means we don't have to build as many roads.
Uh-huh.
We're helping employees stay happier, which means more retention, mm-hmm. which is saves taxpayer money
sure.
as well.
Sure.
And then the 22% productivity.
That's crazy.
Right? I mean, any business would be crazy.
Right.
To, you know, if I went and told you, you can immediately increase productivity by 22%. Jumping all over
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
So it's a big deal, and the best part of all for rural Utah is mm-hmm. that means now rural Utahns can compete for these jobs.
Yes.
Yes.
Historically, only people who lived in the Salt Lake Valley or the Wasatch Front could have.
Well, and it helps people in rural areas take advantage of the great economy that is happening in this state. So you can stay here and have this amazing quality of life that we love, and you can also make a competitive wage as if you were on the Wasatch Front.
Well, and I'll take it even one step further because you're right about all of that. But it now means that kids who grew up in Iron County,
yeah.
you know, who have these jobs now, can take their jobs and move back home.
That's amazing.
And what that does to the economies of these, you know, these small towns,
yeah.
where Minersville or wherever,
yeah.
you come back and you bring, you know, four kids who now go to school.
Uh-huh.
You bring a $60,000, $70,000, $80,000, $90,000 a year job
right.
back with you that you're spending now in that local economy.
In the local, yes.
The ripple effect of that is tremendous.
Uh-huh.
And so it's just a big deal for all of us. And we're struggling to find employees anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
So
yeah.
why not do it this way?
That's so fabulous.
Yeah.
Well, I know you've got a lot of stuff on your plate today. Is there anything that you want to leave us with in Cedar City and Iron County? Talk about whatever you want. Talk about the lieutenant governor. Talk about the campaign. What do you want us to know here?
Yeah, no, I mean, just a couple things I would say. First of all, I use Cedar City as an example everywhere I go. So I know politicians come to town and say nice things about the people.
Hello, Detroit!
Yeah.
Just like the rock star, remembering where you are before you perform your set list. But I actually do talk about Cedar everywhere I go. And I talked about this yesterday a little bit at the Rural Summit. I call it the audacity of Cedar City because there's all of these crazy people who just decided that Cedar City was the center of the universe,
uh-huh.
even though it wasn't. And then somehow willed it to be because not just were they crazy and had audacity, but the people around them uh-huh. believed and supported. Fred Adams, who I was with last night,
okay.
like the Shakespeare Festival should not exist.
Right.
It should not be a thing. This is the last place you should have that world-renowned Shakespeare Festival.
A Tony Award-winning
Shakespeare Festival.
Yeah.
And wherever I travel across the country, people talk to me, they're like, oh, you have the Shakespeare Festival. Uh-huh. I'm like, yeah, we do.
Yes,
and
we
it's
do.
Crazy. That should not be. The Summer Games.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you know, guy goes to the Olympics in 1984 in Los Angeles and said, we should do this.
Yes.
Nobody
yes.
thinks that way.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
yet, Cedar Cityans, is that how we say
it?
I don't know.
It is now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do that. And people believe in it. And now you've got 9,000 athletes coming to Cedar City.
With all of their families.
With their families.
Yeah.
And what that does,
yeah.
again, to the economy. Festival yeah. City USA. That's the type of out of the box thinking that we need in rural Utah and in Utah, these moonshots that end up because we believe in it and we work together. That's the other piece, though. It's not just the one person. It's everyone else working together to make that happen. And I love that about Cedar City. And it's part of why my wife and I decided to run for office. We love the state so much. We're doing service projects everywhere we go, reminding people that government was not designed to solve all of our problems, right? This was not government coming in and saying, we should have a festival, right? It was the private sector and people out there with these big ideas, and then government and others rallied around to make that happen. And there's so much service. The volunteers during the Shakespeare Festival, the volunteers during the Olympics that we hosted in 2000, in 2002. Utah's an incredible place for
that.
And we want to remind people of that. And this is just ground zero for the great things that are happening. So congratulations.
Thank you.
We're so excited because our son is going to school here now. Started last
we're
week.
We're so thrilled to have him.
So we get to come back even more.
Yeah, that's so great.
So thank you.
So great. Well, I know we don't have too much longer. Do you have anything else you want to jump in with?
No, I just appreciate that you've taken some time to talk to us about, you know, how things matter for us. As you pointed out, a lot of times rural communities kind of feel a little skipped over, forgotten sometimes.
Yeah. We're just thrilled that you were here.
We do. No, and I appreciate that. And I do need to mention this. It's harder because every year, and we're doing the census next year, we grow as a state. We're the fastest growing state in the country. But the Wasatch Front always grows faster than rural Utah.
Yeah.
So when we redistrict, that inevitably means that the Wasatch Front gets more members of the House and the Senate, and rural Utah loses those voices. And so it's just more important than ever that we elect good people who understand rural Utah. And I mean that selfishly, but I also mean when we look at the members of the House and Senate from our districts, and we're very fortunate here in Cedar City and in Southern Utah, the Sunshine Caucus.
Yeah, no, we've got some great, great people.
Incredible.
Yeah.
I mean, Senator Vickers is a great friend.
That's amazing.
Just unbelievable representation here. But we have to work hard to maintain that because when we lose those rural voices, we don't get them back.
Yeah.
And so we have to make sure that we turn out, that we vote, that we make sure our voices are heard.
Okay, we're doing our part.
You guys are doing your part. This podcast is really important. I mean, I mean that. We need these voices out there. So thank you for what you're doing.
Thank you so much. We're, again, thrilled that you were able to take some time out of your schedule, and we're so happy that you're in Cedar City. Welcome, and come back anytime.
Thanks, Jamie.
This has been Color Country Politics, and we'll see you next time.
You've been listening to Color Country Politics, a production in cooperation with Utah Politico Hub and graciously sponsored by Century 21 Prestige Realty at 121 North Main Street, Cedar City. Special thanks to Amoeba Crew for use of their song Background Indie Rock, licensed under Creative Commons. Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever fine podcasts are found. Also, check out our YouTube channel where we post video of our interviews. And don't forget to follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and our website at www.colorcountrypolitics.com.